What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 106, and today we're going to be discussing vitamin D and its role in the body, how having low vitamin D can affect you in so many different ways. This is such a critical vitamin that so many people are deficient in, that just getting the knowledge out there, how important it is, and various ways you can increase it, we both thought was very important, so we're going to tackle that today. But first, we have an article of the week. It's called, Is Grass-Fed Beef Really Worth It? And it's a real good article. It's not that long, but I really recommend you read it. I'll have it linked on the website, so just go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com and you can find it there. But in our, you know, kind of keto carnivore world, the difference between grass-fed and grain-finished beef is a real hot topic. So Tom pulled this article, and I really liked it. So do you want to kind of touch on it real quick, Tom?
Yeah, so I agree with the article, but I just don't agree with the conclusion. But let's kind of get into some of the details. Mm-hmm. So the main differences between grass-fed or grass-finished and grain-finished beef is going to be between vitamin E, vitamin A, and vitamin C. I wasn't really aware that there was a big difference in vitamin C, but looking at the numbers, I mean, I guess it's kind of significant.
A little bit, yeah.
Go ahead.
I said a little bit. It goes from like 7 to 11, that's what they said.
Yeah. I mean, so not much of a difference. And honestly, there's not a lot of vitamin C in beef anyway. Yeah. There's enough so you don't get...
Scurvy?
Yes, you don't get scurvy, but like not a lot, so... But, I mean, we don't really need that much because our body's make uric acid. Mm-hmm. So just kind of going back to the vitamin E, there's about twice as much vitamin E in grass-finished beef compared to grain-finished. And the vitamin A is about, like, 8 to 9 times higher in the pasture raised. So, I mean, hey, those are some very big differences. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the nutrition, which this article doesn't really talk about, is all about the same. So if you're just considering those two vitamins... Like, yeah, there is a gigantic difference, but if you look at the rest of the nutrition overall, there's not much of one.
Yeah, and we have a whole podcast on this. So episode 45 is grass-fed versus grain-fed beef. So if you want a whole deep dive on that, check out that podcast. I really like it. But yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I agreed with most of the article. There was a part that I didn't like, which it talked about glyphosate, it talked about Roundup, and a part of the article talked about toxins in meat. And what this person, actually, I don't know, is this a guy or a girl? I'm referring to this author as a guy, I don't know why.
It's on Paul Saladino's website, but it doesn't have an author, so I don't know if it's by him or not.
Okay, yeah, so I guess, yeah, it doesn't say author, but so it just says, you know, it assumes that these various toxins are higher in grain-finished beef than grass-fed beef, and it laid out a couple reasons. And the reasons are kind of logically sound. You know, I wouldn't really argue with that. But I have read a paper on glyphosate content in beef from conventional raised cows. So these are the cows that are in feedlots. These are the cows that are not 100% grass-fed, and this just, you do not find Roundup in muscle meat. Like, it has been looked at, it has been measured, it has been studied, and I don't think a lot of people know that. They kind of just assume that this feed has Roundup in it and it accumulates in muscle meat, in fat, but it's not true. Like, Roundup, you will find it in the kidneys of cows fed from, you know, traditional corn or soy, that type of stuff that has glyphosate sprayed on it, but it's not found in the muscle meat. So he kind of made these assumptions, you know, and like I said, I understand that, and a lot of people do with grain finished beef. They, you know, they just assume that this happens for a few reasons, but that's not true. And like you said, the vitamin E, and various antioxidants, are they higher in 100% grass-fed beef? Yes. If you have the money and the access, should you get 100% grass-fed beef? Yeah, like, I think you should. Like, it's quality stuff. There's no doubt about it. It's better for the environment in many different aspects. But like you said, he didn't talk about, like, the protein quality is going to be the same. All these other vitamins and minerals are going to be the same. So there's just a few things I didn't agree with. But overall, I thought the article was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm glad you did bring up the toxin part, because it does make a lot of assumptions there. It's like, these are the assumptions that could be in beef.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't actually show any studies that actually show that there are those toxins in that beef.
No references.
And then it goes to show, like, these are the problems with those toxins. Well, it's like, unless we know for sure that those toxins are found in grain-fed versus grass-fed, then we shouldn't even really talk about them.
Exactly.
You're just making a big assumption for no reason.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's very true, and I thought the exact same thing. And they made, I think there was like three other toxins they talked about. I don't know about those ones, and they said that some of them are fat soluble, so maybe they are stored in fat. I don't know. And the thing is, the author doesn't know either. So like you said, we shouldn't make those assumptions.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of links in the article, but there's just none that are leading to studies showing that these toxins are found in that beef.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah, and I think, honestly, in my opinion, I would lean towards the fact that the difference isn't that much different. Like, in my opinion, I doubt they are that much higher, but that's just my own opinion. I don't know, and the author didn't know either, so... But yeah, but I don't know. I think it's a real good article. Read it. Just learn a little bit more about it. And like I said, if you really want to take a deep dive in it and go through literally every vitamin and mineral, which we did go through, check out episode 45. And yeah, just take a deep dive there. But yeah, so I think that's the article of the week. Let's get into vitamin D. You want to kind of just start the whole conversation?
Yeah, so... The real reason we did this podcast is I wanted to know how our bodies, like, convert sunlight into an essential vitamin. That just seems crazy. I know, like, plants do that type of thing all the time, but, like, how do humans do it? Well, as I started looking up vitamin D, there's a lot more into this topic than I kind of realized, so we kind of just changed the direction of this podcast. So now it's actually looking at vitamin D deficiency and just all the different diseases that leads to. So, roughly 50% of the world's population is deficient in vitamin D. That's crazy. Over, like, 50%, half the people. So, if you're in a room of two people, one of you, more than likely, is deficient in vitamin D. And that's true for all different types of populations all around the world, skin color, age groups. It's kind of just spread out, like, really wide. So... what are, like, some of the issues that come along with this vitamin D deficiency? Well, there's, like, seven common diseases, and these are some of the most common diseases that plague the human race, like, right now. Things like osteoporosis, that's having, like, weak, brittle bones. Think about, like, old people when they break their hip. That's osteoporosis. Cancer, depression, heart disease, multiple sclerosis, also known as MS, diabetes, and obesity. These things are super common. We could also throw COVID, because low vitamin D is linked with COVID too. So, I mean, it's just kind of like all over the place right now.
Yeah, we touched on a COVID episode maybe like 3 months ago. At that point, I thought that was going to be the end of COVID, honestly. So if you want to learn more about vitamin D deficiency and how that affects your immune system, go back and check out that episode. I think it's ways you can optimize your immune system. So you can go back and listen to that, because vitamin D does play a key role in our immune system as well. Vitamin D does so much stuff. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and honestly... unfortunately, it's not really that well studied. And the studies that do look at vitamin D, man, they're pretty lacking, because most of them are looking at vitamin D supplements, like as in a pill, not really looking at vitamin D supplement like the way we should get it, which would be through getting sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I had a really big issue with when I was looking through all these studies. It's like, they're looking at a pill, they're looking at dietary. why aren't they putting these people in the sun? Like, you'll get way more benefits.
It's weird to think, though, because, like, I understand just with whatever protocol you're running with your study, you have to control for as many variables as possible. So I get it, like, you know, for any, like, muscle-building study, they're just going to give someone a whey shake because they can't control it very easy. But it doesn't seem that hard to have participants, like, stand outside shirtless for 20 minutes. Like, that seems like something you could control. So I don't know why they don't do these for the studies.
And that would be cheaper than giving everybody a supplement.
It would. Yeah, it'd be free. So that's something we talk about all the time. Like, vitamin D shouldn't be, like, something you don't... I mean, I understand supplementing with it because people can't get outside. But it's one of the things that you literally don't have to pay a penny for. And you can get enough vitamin D to, like, swim in it if you just stand outside long enough, you know?
Yeah, true. All right, so I'm going to get this one out of the way right now because it's true for pretty much every single one of these diseases. The link between low vitamin D and all these diseases could be just, like, healthy user bias. Maybe if you're healthy, you're out in the sunshine more, you're probably doing other healthy activities too. I mean, most jobs that are outside in the sun are usually physically active. Mm-hmm. I mean, a mailman's walking around all the time. If you're doing some sort of construction job, you're with tools, you're lifting stuff, you're walking up and down stairs. So, I mean, if you're outside more, most likely you are going to be exercising more. So that could be one factor that goes into the vitamin D and these diseases, but I'm just going to kind of get that over with. We don't really know for sure. So that's a possibility with all these, but we're going to like even deeper dive than just that.
Yeah. And I think you have to say that because I think that is true, like, for all of these. It's like, there's no doubt that being outside and getting sun and moving, like, healthy user bias is a real thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to be true for 100% of all these cases, but it's probably true for, you know, at least some portion.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one let's look at is osteoporosis and just bone health in general. So vitamin D signals to the gut to absorb calcium and phosphorus, two essential minerals for bone health. So basically, if we don't have enough vitamin D in our diet or through the sunshine, then even if we're consuming plenty of calcium and phosphorus, we're not absorbing enough. So that means we're going to have weak bones. And in adults, this leads to osteoporosis. In children, it leads to rickets, which is weak and soft bones and stunted growth. It can lead to, like, body disformities and stuff like that.
Yeah, so this is just a quick angle I want to mention. Like, this is why we touched on this in, at this point we've touched on everything, I think, with podcasts. But at one point we've touched on calcium supplementation and how just plain calcium supplementation alone, so just taking a calcium supplement without anything else, actually does not increase, like, bone strength or bone health at all. And it can actually increase your CAC score, which is a coronary artery calcification score, because you have all this calcium, but without the associated vitamin D, your body is not going to deposit that calcium in the correct place, which would be your bones. So it deposits it in your arteries and it causes them to stiffen. And that's one of the huge, like, markers for heart health. Stiff arteries is not a good thing. You want them to be pliable so they can expand and contract as needed. So purely supplementing with calcium alone is not recommended. If you're going to take a calcium supplement, pair it with a vitamin D supplement so your body actually absorbs it.
Yeah, vitamin D and vitamin K as well.
Yeah, vitamin K as well.
Yeah, so it's D3 is the type of vitamin D you want, and K2 is the type of K. All right, so another side note, going back off of your side note, one of my favorite studies ever done is the Clara Davis Orphan Study. And this was a study with orphans, I think it was in London, and basically they just had a bunch of children, and they received, like, no education, they weren't getting any direction on what to eat. They basically had a buffet, like, style, like, meal choice at every meal. They didn't have a bunch of candy or, like, ultra-processed foods, but they had, like, meat, fruit, veggies. I think they had some bread and stuff like that to choose from. So one of the children began the study and had rickets. Well, this child was eating cod liver oil every single day without any direction to do so, just relying on their own innate nutritional intelligence. And, you know, after a while, rickets was cured. This child cured themselves of rickets. And as soon as that child was cured, no longer ate the cod liver oil. So their body was just craving this food that they knew that they needed. And as soon as they didn't need it anymore, they stopped eating it. So obviously they weren't doing it for the taste. They were doing it for just what I like to call it innate nutritional intelligence. Mm-hmm. That's how cows know what to eat when they're out in the field. That's how sharks know what to eat. That's why they eat seals. If a shark takes a bite out of a human, they're like, oh shit, what is this skinny thing? Mm-hmm. And they normally just let it go. Like, you know, that's how all animals kind of know what to eat and what not to eat.
Yeah, like, yeah, you bring up this study all the time, and I think it's warranted because it is such a powerful study, and it's, like, very straightforward. Like, it's not complicated. They just gave people access to the foods their body needed, and they let their bodies listen to it, and, yeah, it's powerful, man. It's sad that so many people nowadays don't listen to those cues. Like, how many vegans are out there craving meat, but they don't listen to it because they've read so many bullshit studies saying meat's unhealthy? But their body will tell you, if you're in tune with it, if you really listen, most of the time your body will tell you what you need.
Oh yeah, that's why they have to create all these Impossible Burgers and the Beyond Meat stuff to kind of, like, you know, answer those cravings, even though it's still not really answering the nutrition that they're actually craving.
Yeah, exactly.
And just another side note, because I didn't really know where else to fit this in, calcium is also required for muscle contractions. So low vitamin D levels can lead to decreased strength and endurance due to malabsorption of calcium.
Yeah, that's never a good thing.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, that's not really associated with any diseases or anything, but I will touch on that factor a little bit later on.
Yeah, it just shows that you really need these minerals and vitamins paired together, because in nature, there's no way we would just get, like, solely one of these things at once. You get all of these things paired together.
Yeah, where you're going to find vitamin D, you're going to find some calcium, you're going to find a lot of fat along with it.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff goes together.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next disease is going to be cancer. So there's been several observational studies that show a correlation between low serum vitamin D levels and increased cancer incidence and mortality rates. While these are not the highest quality of studies, they do give some insight on some possibilities. So the largest clinical trial on vitamin D in cancer, known as the VITAL study, did show a 13% reduction in mortality rates on those who supplemented with 1,000 international units of vitamin D daily, but no significant effect on incidence rates. So it didn't really cure you of cancer, but it did make you last longer. So, I mean, there is some benefit with it.
Yeah, it's something.
And one of the proposed mechanisms that vitamin D could battle cancer is due to its anti-angiogenic effects. And this means that it inhibits cancer cells from increasing its blood supply. So we talked about cancer in several podcasts. You can go back. Do you remember, like, which podcast those were?
Oh, I don't. No, I think they're in, like, the 70s.
Yeah, the most recent cancer one, I know we did talk about the angiogenic effects.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the best one to go off of, because I know we've talked about cancer several times.
Yeah.
So basically, cancer cells, they have this angiogenic effect, so they can increase their blood supply, so they can increase the amount of glucose they can get, so they can keep up with its energy demands. So if you cut off its blood supply, then it's not able to get enough glucose, and it's not able to create enough energy. If it's not able to create enough energy, then that cell dies. And there's another way that this can benefit is that it could also prevent cancer cells from spreading, called metastasis. So it's a two-way that it can benefit. One, it's not going to be able to spread across your body as easily, and two, it's probably going to kill off some cancer cells.
Yeah, when I first saw that, you know, cancer and vitamin D were kind of linked, you know, low vitamin D, higher deaths from cancer, I didn't, like, just my basic understanding of cancer and just vitamins and minerals, I wasn't sure, like, where vitamin D linked in there, because I was kind of suspect. It's almost like that breathing book, how the guy was like, you know, if you take a deep breath for a month, you'll cure, scoliosis? It was like some crazy claims, and I was just like, I don't know how that works. But after looking at this, and that makes sense. Like, if it can decrease, like, cancer cells will literally create arteries. Like, they'll create their own blood supply to live, and that's one of the reasons cancer is such a bitch. You know, it's just, that's what has to happen. That's what happens. You know, it's one of the hallmarks of cancer. So if this can stop that from happening, it makes sense that low vitamin D is kind of bad for cancer.
Yeah, and again, I mean, there could also just be that healthy user bias. That could be why that there is that link, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's just based off of correlational studies. When you look at the clinical evidence, it's not as strong. but there is very strong correlational evidence. So the next one we're going to talk about is heart disease. So again, very strong correlational evidence. But however, like when you actually look at the clinical studies, vitamin D supplementation has had little effect and like no effect on improving outcomes or like reversing the disease. So how are they connected? Basically, here's my theory. This wasn't really in any of the articles that I read, but just knowing, like, pretty much from years and years of studying all this different nutritional stuff, I've been able to connect some dots that they weren't connecting in the papers that I read. So for our bodies to create vitamin D from sunlight, we need cholesterol. So we have cholesterol in our skin. That's where we have that cholesterol at. What are most doctors trying to do to prevent heart disease? Lower cholesterol. They're giving you Lipitor, they're giving you some sort of statin drug. So that's a very bad idea. The very first step in converting sunlight into vitamin D is dehydrocholesterol in our skin. So that nutrient gets converted or gets activated by UVB rays from the sun and turns into provitamin D3. So now that's a precursor. That provitamin D3 then goes to the liver and gets converted into hydroxyvitamin D3. Then it goes to the kidneys and gets converted into dihydroxyvitamin D3, the active form. And this dihydroxyvitamin D3 then circulates throughout the body and goes to the vitamin D receptors on all your cells. So without that cholesterol for step one, none of those other steps are possible. So you're not getting any vitamin D for any of these other steps to occur. So that would result in low vitamin D3 as a result from you taking cholesterol-lowering medication.
Yeah, I actually really, like you said, we kind of have just access to, over the years, you know, reading various books and articles and papers, just access to our own thoughts that we can connect these dots, you know? And you're right, like, someone blaming low cholesterol for something, like, that's not going to be in any traditional kind of articles or papers, because low cholesterol is considered a good thing. You know, they would never say low cholesterol is a bad thing. So, but like you said, cholesterol is a backbone for this. Like, without the cholesterol, it's not going to happen. So it makes perfect sense to me that this can, you know, be linked to how low vitamin D causes heart disease, or, you know, it's linked to it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really show any cause and effect, but I could definitely see how low cholesterol from your, from those medications is going to lead to low vitamin D. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be really surprised if there's a lot of people on statin drugs that have optimal vitamin D levels. I'd be really interested to look at those studies. I couldn't really find any out there. That's not something that the drug companies are really going to be, like, you know,
good luck. Good luck finding one.
Trying to fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll never happen. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and another thing, so we talked about how vitamin D increases calcium absorption and muscles need calcium. Well, what's the hardest working muscle in our body?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the heart. Guess what? That needs lots of calcium too. So that's just another way that heart disease can be affected by low vitamin D levels.
Yeah, very true. People don't think of it that way. They think the heart is something, you know, fancy and different, but it's just a muscle. You know, it needs the calcium like that.
Yeah, and another benefit from sunlight is that our bodies produce nitric oxide, which increases blood vessel diameter, which will lower blood pressure. So that's just another mechanism that could be at play there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just a side note, how I was just talking about how we turn sunlight into vitamin D3. So when we consume vitamin D3 through our diet, it's called cholecalciferol.
Yeah,
that gets
something
converted
like that
by the liver and then into the kidney. And then the kidneys. So it just skips that first step. It skips that provitamin D3.
Yeah, I think something about vitamin D, how, like, other vitamins, say, like, vitamin C, is, like, it's pretty straightforward as far as what it does in the body and the kind of the chemical reactions that it's a cofactor in. Like, the big one's collagen. It kind of, you need it there for our body to produce collagen. But vitamin D is more, like I just said, you call it a vitamin, you don't call it vitamin D, but it's kind of more than that. It's complicated. It's almost like a hormone. So I think that's one of the reasons why you go through these papers and these studies, and some of the studies are lacking and the evidence, it might not be there. It's because it's kind of complicated. You know, it's different. It's kind of, it's very unique in the form of a vitamin.
Yeah, that's true. And it's not very well, I don't know if it's not well studied or if it's just not well understood.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably a combination of the two.
Yeah.
So yeah, like there's definitely needs to be more studies out there, better studies out there so we can learn more about this.
Yeah, I agree.
So the next one we're going to look at is depression. And again, low vitamin D serum levels is associated with increased risk of depression. So there are vitamin D receptors on the neurons and the glia in the brain. However, again, vitamin D supplementation has been shown to have like no effect on depression. So not really sure what's going on there. But one thing I do know, sunlight is associated with better vitamin D levels. One thing that sunlight exposure also leads to is increased serotonin production. While depression does have many causes and is still not well understood, even though we've been throwing a lot of money and been studying the hell out of it recently, there is a link between low serotonin levels and depression. So increasing serotonin levels via sun exposure may not cure everyone of depression, but it is likely that it will improve symptoms in some people. And it, again, is completely free. So that's one way you can increase your vitamin D levels and increase your serotonin.
Yeah, it's completely free, and it's completely side-effect free. So I know, are they called SSRIs? Those are the anti... Yeah, so those... I mean, I've looked into that a little bit, and I think the kind of serotonin theory for depression, there's a ton of holes in it. Like, I think there's a lot about depression we don't understand, like Tom said. But that was kind of the backbone of SSRIs. You know, we can increase the serotonin in our brains and hopefully that helps with the depression. But there are so many damn side effects of those drugs, one of them being increased risk of suicide. So how about don't take these crazy ass medications, all these side effects, and just go outside for 20, 30 minutes? It seems like the better option, you know?
Definitely. And when you think of some place that you want to go on vacation,
sunny.
Like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be somewhere where there's a lot of sunshine.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to the beaches of Mexico. I want to go to some tropical island somewhere. Like, I want to go to the beaches of California. It's like someplace like that is where you want to go on vacation. It's like, I'm not trying to go to Alaska during wintertime where I'm not going to see the sunshine for 3 months.
Yeah, freeze your ass off. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like, depression is really not well understood. I think, like, in the coming years, we're probably going to have more terms to define depression. I think right now it's mostly just a blanket term. And once we kind of understand it a little bit better, then we can be like, oh, this is this type of depression. This is this type of depression. And kind of like branch it out a little bit and like, okay, this depression is linked to low serotonin. This depression is linked to this neurotransmitter or this cause. I think that's kind of like the biggest problem that we have with depression is that we just have that one word to define what's more than likely multiple diseases or mental illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's true for, like, all mental illness. Unfortunately, like, it's not very well studied. And since it's not something you can really directly measure, it's mostly something that's kind of like how somebody behaves. It's really hard to study and really hard to define and, like, clear, like, explanations.
Yeah, it's just complicated. There's no way around it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, with mental diseases, the definition on those changes pretty much every time they write the new textbook. I mean, that comes out every, like, few years. I think it's every 5 to 10 years. And every time that comes out, it's called the DSM. Like, basically, the diagnosis has changed. Like, 1 year you could have split personality disorder, and then now that's no longer an illness, and now it's dissociative identity disorder, I think is what it like changed into.
Mm-hmm.
They're constantly changing. I mean, this has probably changed since I studied this stuff, which was, I think, like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it has. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So now on to multiple sclerosis. Most people just call it MS. So this is an autoimmune disease that affects the nervous system by damaging the myelin sheath around neurons. This leads to motor, sensory, and cognitive impairments. So you could have problems moving, you could have muscle weakness, you could have problems with different sensory senses, like seeing, and cognitive impairments, like you might just be tired, slower, that type of thing. So it can be expressed in many different ways. Since our myelin sheath around our neurons do so much, That's how our body communicates. That's how our brain can tell our toe to move and stuff like that. Or also just let you know that, hey, your toe just stepped on a nail. It's these neurons. So if these aren't working properly, so many different things can go wrong.
For sure. Yeah, one of my cousins actually got diagnosed with MS fairly recently. And it's kind of just in the traditional medical world, not a... It is a bad diagnosis, no doubt. Like, I'm not saying it's a good thing. But they're kind of told, like, hey, man, sorry, but this is just your life now. Like, there's no real treatment for it nowadays. And so I told my cousin, I was like, obviously, I told him go low carb. I told him eat whole foods. I told him to take a couple supplements. But as far as on their end, like, doctors are kind of just like, you know, hey, man, like, sorry. Those are kind of the cards you were dealt.
I mean, that, unfortunately, like, the nervous system doesn't really heal itself as quickly as other, like, organ systems do. I broke my arm over a decade ago, and I broke it, like, right on a nerve, and I still have a lot of muscle weakness and, like, sensory problems in my left hand as a result of that. So I don't know if that's ever going to come back. I don't know if I'm ever going to regain, like, the strength and, like, the feeling in that hand or not. Or at least that part of the hand. It's not like my whole hand is numb. But yeah, I mean, that's 10 years ago, and I still feel the same.
Is your palm still kind of atrophied?
Oh, yeah.
It never came back, huh?
Nope.
Yeah.
So with that, there's a lot of, like, kind of redundancies just in case this happens to you. So there'll be different nerves that'll innervate different muscles in your hand. So I can still, like, make a fist, but... some of the other muscles, because you have tons of muscles in your hand, like, I can't extend my pinky as far out as I should. And the feeling on, like, the top of my, like, left hand, like, my ring finger and pinky and, like, that half of that hand, I can be touching something and won't even know it. It just kind of feels like it's asleep all the time. But if I were to stab myself, like, go a little bit deeper, I would feel that. So it's like some of the muscles just aren't activated anymore, and some of the nerve, some of the sensory nerves, like, just aren't activated anymore.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. I mean, I've been trying to do things to improve it over the last 10 years. I've been trying to work on my grip strength. It's just, I don't know, you can't make a muscle stronger that just won't even fire.
Yeah, if it won't fire. Exactly. No, I've had very similar issues with my legs because of my back injuries. Like, certain muscles in my legs are just not innervated anymore. They're just very weak, very atrophied. And like you said, it doesn't matter if you train them because they're not firing. It's just some of the surrounding muscles are firing enough that, you know, I can squat, that I can deadlift, but there's plenty of muscles down there that do not fire anymore. And I haven't talked about it recently, but I have, like, been dealing with more back issues lately, and I know I just talked to Tom about it, but I don't think I told you. Did I tell you how my left foot is, like, numb 24/7 now? Did I tell you that?
No, this is the first time I'm hearing that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's kind of like a new symptom. It happened maybe 2 weeks ago. Like, the middle of my left foot is just numb, and I'm like, well, that's great. You know what I mean? Like, that's a whole new... you can tell some damage has been done recently.
So does that... can you still move it okay? Is it just sensory, or is it motor as well?
Just sensory. And, yeah, I can still move it. I can still, you know, walk fine, thank God. But it's a weird-ass feeling. Like, it feels... like, I'm just... it's new, obviously, so I'm not used to it. Like, I think at this point, you're kind of used to that numb feeling, you know, because you've had it for so long. But, like, I'm not used to not feeling my foot, so it feels weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, my left hand has been kind of like, you know, when your hand falls asleep.
Uh-huh.
Like, my left hand has been asleep for, like, over a decade
now. Yeah, no, that sucks. Like, I'm not used to it. Like, I'm not looking for... I'm hoping it comes back. I doubt it will, but, hey, it is what it is. And people are telling me, like, oh, you got to stop lifting weights. You got to lose weight. You got to be average. And I was like, I'd rather be dead. You know, that's what I'm telling people. Like, I don't give a shit. But that's just my own little weird, like... David Goggins mentality that kicks in, you know?
Well, I don't really know how some of that would even benefit, to be honest. I mean, like, losing weight, I don't know what that would do, because it's not like you have a bunch of fat laying around or anything like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't really... I mean, like, you do have a lot of muscle, but I would think mostly that muscle is there to help you with your posture more, so that shouldn't be putting extra, like, strain on your back and your spine or anything like that. So I don't really know, like, how losing weight and muscle would, like, give you any benefit.
Yeah, it's just people think that, you know, the extra weight is just putting more stress on my spinal cord. And I get it. They're just being, you know, they're just worried, you know. And as far as, like, they tell me to stop working out because working out was the genesis of my initial injury. So they think, you know, hey, just stop working out. But I told them, like, I haven't squatted in, shit, I don't know, months. I haven't deadlifted in months. Like, any exercise that does put me in kind of a more, you know, bad position, I don't do.
Yeah.
So it kind of sucks, but you know, it is what it is. Like, there's something about deadlift. If you're out there and you're a weightlifter, and I know I'm sure some gym bros listen to this because that's kind of what I am to my core. There is something primal about deadlifting. There is something primal about squatting that even though it sucks while you're doing it, it feels good afterwards. Like, you feel like you did some hard shit. So it kind of sucks that I can't do that anymore, but I'm just kind of, you know, I'm just slowly like wrapping my head around that.
I mean, when it comes to all the lifts, I think, like, squatting and, like, deadlifts probably do have, like, the most primal, like, connection to us. Because, I mean, like, how often would our, like, caveman ancestors laid on their back and picked up a rock and just started, like, bench pressing it over their chest?
Never.
Probably never.
Yeah,
but never. I'm pretty sure at some point they had to pick up something heavy.
And move it.
And, like, yeah, move it as a deadlift. Mm-hmm. Or throw somebody on their back, throw a deer on their back.
And carry
and
it.
And walk.
Yeah.
And carry it. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a squat, basically. So I'm sure, like, those things go back. Like,
there's something like in
when
us.
When I'm doing those, I'm connecting with, like, my primal ancestors.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. No, I 1,000% agree. And, I don't know, like, it's cool, like, whatever, doing curls is fun, you know, like, I love getting an arm pump, but there's just something different about doing those other lifts, there just is. Yeah.
All right, so that was a big tangent.
Yeah, sorry.
So, back to MS and vitamin D. So, MS is really, really rare near the equator, and the farther you move away from the equator, the risk increases. So, again, like, low vitamin D is very, very strongly correlated with increased risk of MS. Unfortunately, there are no clinical studies looking at vitamin D's effect on MS, so there's not much other to go off of than just, like, the little information that I just mentioned. But, again, like, hey, so, I mean, that, I think that really clearly shows that there is a strong connection there. We just don't know what it is yet. So get some sunshine. Sunshine will definitely improve your chances of not developing MS. I don't know if it's going to help you if you already have it. I don't know if it's going to give you better outcomes. But as far as prevention is concerned, I mean, this is some really strong evidence right here. And I would definitely, if you're worried about developing MS, make sure you're getting some sunshine. So the last two diseases, I'm just going to tie together because pretty much the mechanism is the same for both of them. And that's type 2 diabetes and obesity. I know we've talked about type 2 diabetes all the time, and we talk about, I don't know if we've actually really ever discussed obesity, but I mean, it's pretty much connected with all the diseases out there.
Yeah.
So again, low serum vitamin D levels is strongly associated with increased risk of diabetes and obesity. So this is one thing I did not know at all. Vitamin D plays a role in glucose metabolism. So it stimulates insulin secretion via the vitamin D receptor on pancreatic beta cells and reduces peripheral insulin resistance through vitamin D receptors in the muscles and the liver. So beta cells, once your beta cells are damaged, that's what leads to, damaged beta cells in your pancreas, that's type 1 diabetes. But pretty much if you can keep those beta cells working properly, optimally, you'll be able to better regulate your insulin levels. And if you're able to keep your muscles and your liver insulin sensitive, which vitamin D helps out with, you're going to greatly improve your chances of develop or greatly lower your chances of developing diabetes. So that's great. It helps out on both fronts. So it's helping your muscles and your liver take in more glucose and stay insulin sensitive and improve that beta cell function so you're able to properly produce insulin.
Yeah, that's huge. Like, I think out of all the things we talked about, you know, cancer sucks, MS would be a bitch to get, but really the vast majority of people, this is what they're going to be dealing with, diabetes and obesity. We talked about it a few weeks back, how the vast majority of people out there are overweight, are metabolically unhealthy, and so vitamin D can help with that, just like you said, increasing insulin sensitivity. And just to briefly mention real quick, because we talked about beta cells, if you don't know what that is. So our pancreas, Well, pancreas produces a ton of shit, but part of it, they have beta cells and alpha cells, and they release, the beta cells release insulin, and insulin is kind of what controls blood glucose. It does a whole bunch of stuff, but one of the things it does is kind of control blood glucose. And then the alpha cells release glucagon, and that causes our body to release glucose instead of absorb glucose. So having healthy, functional beta cells in our pancreas is key to having insulin sensitivity and proper glucose regulation. So beta cell dysfunction, which can happen if you, you know, store a bunch of fat in your pancreas, is one of the steps that will lead to diabetes.
Yeah, if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, we've been talking about insulin resistance all the time. And insulin resistance is associated with pretty much every single one of these diseases that we talked about above.
Yep.
It's linked to depression. It's strongly linked to heart disease and cancer. I don't know if it's linked to bone health or not, but probably.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
And multiple sclerosis, we talked about all of these diseases in one way or another in our keto for different diseases. So MS is an autoimmune disease. There's ways that going on a ketogenic diet can help you improve your autoimmune issues. So, I mean, all these things are linked together. So insulin, being able to control that insulin and remaining insulin sensitive is super vital for just improving your overall health, not only just against type 2 diabetes and obesity, but basically against every other disease out there.
Yeah, it's huge.
If you actually look at the clinical studies, there's been little like shown benefit from vitamin D supplementation. But I think it's mostly because by the time someone has diabetes, a lot of damage has already been done. So just taking one pill a day isn't going to cut it. Like if you really want to reverse the damage that's caused that somebody has that has diabetes, because a lot of damage has been done, you're going to have to be doing a lot more than just taking some pill. You're going to have to change your diet, start exercising more, start lowering your stress or sleeping better. You need to do pretty much everything out there, not just take some pill and hopefully you get better.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I think that's partly because the measurement we use to gauge diabetes is blood glucose. And that's such a shit marker for diabetes, because once your blood glucose does become dysregulated, like, you know, once you walk around, your blood glucose is in the 200s, 300s, like you are so far gone. You are so sick. But that's just a marker we use. And I think that's like people, I don't know, not too many people understand that.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's the measurements that we have. We don't have anything better. Or, I mean, if we do have better measurements, we're not really using them. Fasting insulin is a much better measurement and
yeah,
will detect diabetes way sooner.
Yeah.
It's just not very, it's not used widely enough.
Yeah, it's not used at all. Yeah, a HOMA IR, like you can go through, get that scan done, or excuse me, get that test done, and that'll tell you literally years before your blood glucose becomes like all messed up that you have diabetes. But obviously no one's prescribing that test, and it's just doctors don't, either they don't know about it or they just don't care. I don't know.
If you do have low vitamin D levels, it's not like you're just going to get one of these issues. You're not just going to get one of these diseases. Most likely, you're going to have some effect on all of these. I mean, just think, if you have obesity, like, and you have weak bones, oh man, good luck. You're going to have weak little bones, and you have a bunch of extra weight carrying around. I don't know how your legs are going to be able to handle it. Most likely, they're not going to be able to handle it for very long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just one issue. Type 2 diabetes, obesity, heart disease, those are very, very strongly linked. So, hey, like, low vitamin D could lead to all three of those. Depression is another one that's very strongly linked with type 2 diabetes and obesity. Multiple sclerosis and pretty much all other autoimmune diseases also are strongly linked. Like, all these diseases are linked together. So, I mean, like, the people that have one of these issues are more likely to have all of these issues, or at least, you know, at least one more. So, if you can prevent one or all these diseases by doing something as easy as getting some sunshine every once in a while, like, why not? It's free, and it'll save you so much money in health bills. It'll give you a much better quality of life. So definitely, like, that's something you should be aware of. Not enough people are.
Yeah.
I didn't really realize how important vitamin D was until, like, recently, until I really started looking into this. I knew it was important, but I didn't know it was linked to cancer and heart disease and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so now that you know it's important, how do you make sure that you do get your vitamin D levels optimal? All right, so the best thing you can do is get direct sunlight. And you really want to do this at midday. So, like, yeah, you can do it at dawn and at dusk, like, you know, because you are getting some sunshine, but to really get the most benefit, you want to do it when the sun's like around noon, or at least just, you know, high up in the sky, not when you're just getting that like half-assed sunshine when it's like on the horizon.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like to kind of go on morning walks, you know, the 6, 7, 8 a.m., and the sun's out, but it's not very hot, and like, okay, you know, it's good. But the thing is, from the perspective of actually creating enough vitamin D, you want, there's apps out there, I have one on my phone actually, that measure the UV index of where you are at that particular time. And for your body to actually produce vitamin D, you need a UV index of 3. And that doesn't happen at like 6 a.m. when the sun is barely like over the horizon. Like, that's just simply not enough sunlight. That's not enough UV radiation to produce vitamin D. So like Tom said, it's really important. You can go, like, it's not, you know, completely useless to go on those early ass morning walks or those late evening walks, but it's best to go when the sun is really out there and you can actually feel it hit your skin.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you should be doing this, try to do at least 10 minutes a day. 30 minutes a day is better. If you have darker skin, then you need even more time. And the more sun, or the more skin you have exposed, the more vitamin D your body will produce. So if you can go out in a tank top, go shirtless, you know, wear some shorts, something along those lines while you're doing those walks, that's even better. The more skin you have exposed, that's more cholesterol that can get turned into more vitamin D. And if you think, oh, you know, I don't really need to worry about going on a walk. I work in a window. The window's open. I have the sun shining through a window, or I have a very long commute. So, hey, the sun's shining on me through my windshield. Sunlight through a window does not count. So the glass can absorb UVB rays, and those are the ones that we need to create vitamin D. So you do need to be in direct sunshine. That glass, even though it's see-through, not all the ultraviolet rays are penetrating it equally. So those UVB rays are going to be blocked, or at least partially blocked. So you're not going to be getting as much sunshine as you might think you will be.
Yeah, I think that's so, I don't know what the word is, but like, I don't know, typical. Like, of course, like, people, if like windows didn't block UVB, I think the vast majority of people, or at least way more people, would have adequate amount of vitamin D, because we are, it's just the way society is. Most people are inside all day. Most people are in their cars all day. And it would be great if the sun, like, through windows would be effective at stimulating vitamin D synthesis. Like, that'd be awesome. But of course not. Like, of course, it's just how the world is nowadays. We've created everything to make it hard for us to make vitamin D. Like, no one goes outside, and even the windows block what we need.
Yeah, so unless you have a convertible, that daily commute does not count.
Doesn't do nothing, yeah.
And another thing is that sunscreens can also block UVB rays. That's the point of a sunscreen. So if you are going to be in the sun all day and you are worried about getting sunburned, then just wait until you've been out in the sun for about 20 to 30 minutes, and then you can put on your mineral-based sunscreen. I said mineral-based sunscreen for a reason. Those are the best types of sunscreens you should be using. The other ones are full of tons of toxins. I know we have at least one podcast on it. I think we might have two podcasts on just what the right mineral-based sunscreens to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go to the website. So go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can just search sunscreen, and all the papers and all the podcasts we have on sunscreen will come up. So that's a quick way to find it.
Yeah, and another great resource is Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, and they have a great resource on telling you what the best sunscreens to buy are and which ones to avoid.
Yeah, and I know, like, right now we're talking about how great the sun is, and it's free and all that type of stuff, and that's all true, but someone like me, I'm very white, and if I go outside around midday, I can stand outside, like, shirtless and just in, like, shorts for maybe 10 to 20 minutes, but after that, like, my skin will start to get red, and eventually I will burn no matter what. So be aware, like, you know, if you're really white like me, like, you will get burned eventually, so just be aware of that, but that doesn't mean don't go in the sun.
Yeah, we're not vampires. We've evolved with the sun. We're supposed to get sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of benefits of the sun, so don't be completely afraid of it and avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
And one other thing, this didn't actually come across any of the articles that I've read, but this just goes back to a study that I've read years ago. I couldn't find it, so I didn't include it in the show notes. But I know if you're wearing sunglasses, you're more likely to get sunburn. And I think that has something to do with the photoreceptors in your eye. That's where the most photoreceptors are. That must have something to do with the melanin production, or just your body's just thinking that you're not getting as much sun radiation as you actually are. So I'm willing to bet that sunglasses do probably play a role in how much vitamin D you're able to produce. I don't know for sure, but I'm just kind of connecting some dots based off of a study I read a long time ago. So if you are doing the sunshine or the sun exposure, I would also not wear sunglasses. Yeah. The only time personally I wear sunglasses is if the sun is like directly in my eye and I'm like driving a car. Because then it's like, okay, me crashing because I can't see is way more dangerous than not getting enough vitamin D.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to weigh the risk there for sure. No, but I do. I remember you've talked about that in the past. I don't wear shades when I try and purposely sit in the sun. And that's hard for me. I got like baby blue eyes, so my eyes are super sensitive to the sun. But I don't care. Like, I'll let them water, and I just get as much vitamin D as I can. But even though you can't remember the details of that study, from my kind of, like I said, basic ass understanding of how the human body works, there's no doubt that everything is connected. And did we evolve with sunglasses a million years ago? We sure didn't. You know, so it makes sense that that would affect it in some way.
Yeah, I can't even think of anything that would act similarly to sunglasses. Like, that would have never been possible up until recently.
I mean, a hat, you know?
But, I mean, the only thing I could think of is just, like, a cloudy day.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. If it's overcast, I mean, that's kind of what sunglasses do. It would just make every day overcast. All right, so enough just kind of reckless speculation.
Yeah.
So the other way to get vitamin D is through your food. So vitamin D is not found in the plant kingdom. Sorry, vegans, this is another essential nutrient that your silly diet is lacking in. However, some foods are fortified with vitamin D3, and those would be like cereals and like nut milks. So you can get vitamin D because of supplementation following a vegan-based diet, but that's not natural. So don't think these foods naturally contain it. They're being fortified with it. It's being added later on.
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, like we said, it's not naturally found in the food sources. You will not find, like, vitamin D in the plant kingdom. Sorry, it's just not a thing. But I think it's great that we actually do fortify these grains with vitamin D. Like, I don't think people should be eating the way they do, but people better thank God that we actually do fortify these foods, because you will not find enough vitamins and minerals in these foods naturally, you know?
So we just talked at the beginning of the podcast, I started with about 50% of people are low in vitamin D levels. And last week we just talked about how milk and all the benefits of milk, and just like how many people start off each day with milk and cereal.
Uh-huh.
So those are two very good dietary sources of vitamin D that many people are consuming on a daily basis, and still half the population is low in vitamin D.
Just think if we didn't fortify those grains.
Oh, it'd be 80%.
Oh, probably. Yeah, at least. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, like, I guess the scientists kind of know what's up.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it'd be even better if they just told everybody, like, oh, hey, should go out in the sunshine more instead of relying on your milk and cereal for your vitamin D.
No, I can't do that, though, man. The sun's dangerous. You didn't know? That's the narrative.
I mean, I guess if, like, some pharmaceutical company can figure out a way to, like, copyright the sun, like, sunshine, and make money off of it, maybe then it'll happen.
Yeah.
So the closest thing in the plant kingdom to vitamin D would be mushrooms. However, they contain vitamin D2, and our bodies use vitamin D3. And that conversion rate is not very well understood. I looked at several different studies. And it seems like at best 10% of it can get converted, like under optimal conditions. And if only 10% of it can get converted, it's also true that 0% of it can get converted.
Yep.
So 10% is like under the best conditions. So you need to consume a ton of mushrooms, and not all mushrooms even contain vitamin D2. It's only certain mushrooms, and most of the time they have to be raised a certain way so that they produce extra vitamin D2. And they're really still not that high.
Yeah, I think that whole argument is that goes to everything with any sort of vegetarian or vegan diet. Like, and I think, I don't know, if I guess they use it for their own argument. It makes sense, you know, like, no, no, our body can convert vitamin D2 to D3. Our body can convert, you know, these, like, I don't know, shit forms of beta carotene into actual vitamin A. But the truth is, our body is just, even like Tom said, in the most optimal conditions, like if you are a young, you're, I don't know, 20 years old, super fit, like even those situations, our body just, they just, it's just not good at converting these kind of like lower forms of vitamins and minerals, especially the ones found in plants, into actual usable vitamins and minerals. Like our body is not good at that conversion. One of the big ones is actually like omega-3s. Like our body is not very good at converting these like 18 carbon lengths, like either EPA or no, excuse me, ALA into EPA or DHA. Like our body's not good at that. And people need to understand that. Like, it's true that our body can convert it, but it's not optimal and it's not very efficient. And I feel like vegetarians and vegans, they kind of, they use that argument that our body can make it, but it's just not, I don't know, it's like half truth. It's not completely true. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like,
if, it's just deceptive. It's very deceptive.
If we were supposed to get vitamin A through beta carotene, our bodies should be much better at converting it.
Yes.
We should be able to convert 50% of it, not 10% of it, basically.
But like you said, even if it says, like, it says upwards of 10%, it's the same thing with omega-3s. It's like, it, even with omega-3, it's actually even less. But if it's upwards of 10%, that means it also could be 0%. And it kind of depends on the person and the health of that individual. So that's, I don't know, no one talks about that.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it comes to with these, like, fat-soluble vitamins, like vitamin A and vitamin D, a lot of that is, like, are you consuming fat with it? Because, I mean, naturally, that's how you would be consuming it. So you need a lot of fat to go along with it so you can better absorb these fat-soluble vitamins. So now, what are the actual good food sources for vitamin D? So I talked about earlier how I believe she was a young girl who cured herself of rickets using cod liver oil. Cod liver oil is by far the best. It's not even close. But I can totally understand if you don't want to be consuming cod liver oil, that doesn't sound too appetizing. So the next best thing is going to be some like other cold water fish. Stuff like trout and salmon are also really high in vitamin D. Some other foods. So mushrooms is actually fourth on this list. And those are those specially grown mushrooms that I was talking about. They're exposed to excessive UV light, so they're able to produce more vitamin D. So here they're fourth on that list. But if you actually use that conversion ratio, because it's not the right type of D3, they should be much, much lower on the list and barely not even an honorable mention. It should be like way lower.
Way lower.
So some other things would be whole milk, especially if it's vitamin D fortified. I guess some of the other, like some of the other top things on this list, unfortunately, are the ones that have been fortified. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at more natural things, eggs is a good one. Sardines is a good one. Actually, eggs is a really good one. I'm just looking at the serving size here, and the serving size is only one scrambled egg. I mean, I don't know who has one egg only. If you consume like 5 eggs or something like that, you're getting so much more. So yeah, like eggs, liver is another great source. I don't see it on here, but I know pork is pretty high in vitamin D. Uh-huh. I'm not sure why it didn't make this list that I'm looking at, but it seems like trout, salmon, cod, those are some of the best sources, especially if you're going to be going for that liver. Eggs, sardines, beef liver is another good source. So something along those lines. So there are plenty of ways, but the very best way is going to be sunshine. Natural sunshine is the best way to get it.
Yep. And I think, yeah, just to touch on a few things you said there. So I know cod liver oil sounds disgusting. Like, I totally get it. But I promise there are brands out there that don't taste that bad, because I've taken it before. I think through like the winter months, and especially in my previous kind of living situation, I wasn't able to get outside very often. So I would supplement with cod liver oil for the vitamin D. And it's also a good source of vitamin A, and it's a good source of omega-3s as well. So I think if you are going to supplement, go with cod liver oil. It does not taste bad. There are some out there that are kind of the lemon flavor. That's one I had. And I promise it genuinely tastes like lemon water. The consistency might be gross for some people. Like, you know, kind of, I don't know, you can go taste like mineral oil, like it's going to be that kind of consistency. So if that grosses you out, kind of I don't know, deal with it or mix it in with like a shake. Like that way kind of masks the flavor completely. I would just drink it straight because that oil consistency doesn't bother me. But yeah, so cauliflower oil doesn't taste that bad, I promise. And also, you said eggs, how like if you eat 5 eggs, like, you know, it's not that big a deal. I don't know what it, I think we're both kind of skewed with egg consumption because I've eaten, I mean, shit, hundreds of eggs, it feels like, at one point. Like, it's not a problem for me to eat eggs. And I know you, it's not a problem for you either. But for whatever reason, I've noticed in my life, just the people around me, they will eat 1 egg or they will eat 2 eggs. And it blows my mind. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, eat like 5 at the minimum. You know what I mean? But for whatever reason, people do not eat a lot of eggs.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time when I eat eggs, it's either like 12 or somewhere between 12 and 8. Occasionally, I'll only do 5 eggs, and that's if I'm just like, I just need a light, nice little snack of it, yeah, just to hold me over until I actually have a meal later, uh-huh, on. But like, yeah, unless I'm consuming like 8 eggs, I mean, and that's not only 8 eggs straight, that's like 8 eggs with some other food.
I'm telling you, like, man, we're weird.
You're right.
Yeah, we're the outliers with that. We are.
Yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much all I wanted to touch on. I mean, hey, if you are working graveyard or if you are somewhere far away from the equator and you're not able to get adequate sunshine, or if you live in like California, how it's been the last few weeks, and you're not able to go outside due to the poor air quality, and if you do go outside, the sun's been blocked by the smoke out here, that's when you should be thinking about getting some of that cod liver oil, maybe eat some more fish, eat some more eggs, maybe consider supplementing with that cod liver oil, something along those lines. I would only recommend doing that is if you're not able to get the proper sunshine. Mm-hmm. But sunshine should always be number one.
Always, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Hope you guys liked it. Vitamin D is important, no doubt about it. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe if you haven't already done so. If you have, thank you. We appreciate the feedback. You can find us anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.